Hi, welcome to the What If Podcast. Your host tonight gonna be Spanker Whatnot and Ran Cramper Snap.
Nailed it! Oh, she friggin' nailed it, bud.
Hi, buddy.
Hi, buddy.
Greetings.
Greetings.
How goes it?
You know what? I'm all right.
Great.
I didn't rap this time.
Nah, fuck.
Sorry, guys. You guys appeared to like the last one. That's dope. Guess we'll do more of that.
Right out of the gate with that hot self-congratulation take.
No, look, the reason I'm doing it is because...
Oh, you guys like that when I do that thing.
No, that's right.
You did like that because that shit's hot.
No. What had happened was... We did a rap in an episode like 10 or 15 episodes ago, and a couple people emailed and they were like, what the fuck was that? And so that's why when I finished it in the last episode, I was like, tell us that you don't like it. We don't care.
Shit went bad real quick.
But then everybody seemed to do the other thing and say that they did like it. So all I'm trying to call out is that I'm surprised by the positive reaction. And you know what? If that is what is happening right now, I'm fully fucking here for it. You guys can try to make me feel better as much as you want. The world is a hard place. We all deserve somebody out there trying to make us feel a little better about it.
Just gonna send it.
You see he put out his new merch line today?
No.
Larry Enticer.
What is it?
Oh, it's great.
Can we buy fanny packs?
He's got some really nice wraparound giant sunglasses.
Sick.
He's got some like racing style tees. He's got a tank top.
Woo!
Many options, bro.
Can I have the sounder board today? Since you're going to tell me more about Benny and bro, I've been doing this the whole time.
Benny and the Jets?
I keep thinking of Benny Hill.
Big trash.
I keep thinking that it should be Benny Hill from the Benny Hill show or whatever the fuck that was.
Hmm?
You know Benny Hill?
I don't know that reference. I mean, that's a name I've heard.
You understand the concept of Benny Hill? Didn't Benny Hill have a TV show and he was like a comedian?
See, that's what I'm saying. I don't know any of these things.
Yeah.
I don't have the world's longest USB cable today. Yeah. Does this reach to you?
The Benny Hill show. I'm right. Look at me being right about a thing.
I wasn't disagreeing with you. I was just saying I didn't know what it was.
No, I was disagreeing with myself.
let me swap that to the other side of the old lappy.
Sick.
I don't know why in 3 years of doing this show, I've never pulled any Strong Bad sounders.
I believe we've referenced it before.
I know,
and said we should pull them.
Here I am fucking up again, I guess.
Question.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think the age range required is to understand Strong Bad references? Because I feel like it's a relatively narrow point of...
It was very early in like internet meme culture.
Right.
Well,
I think like the earliest aughts.
Yeah, I'm trying to think when that stuff was like at its peak. Was it 03, 04 maybe? Somewhere in there?
I would say 02? maybe a little earlier. Like,
yeah, I guess I was probably still in high school.
Yeah.
When I thought that shit was hilarious.
And it was everywhere.
So maybe it was like, 01, 02, something like that.
That's kind of where my head was at too. Maybe 01, 02, 03.
I think if you got to be between like 30 and 35 probably.
That's probably right.
To have caught that and been at an age where like it was funny to you. I gotta imagine if we go back to that shit, it's not funny.
Email.
Right. Like that's not funny.
No. But I think part of the comedy of it was one of those things where the more that you understood the characters in Strong Bad and the tropes of it, it became funnier. You know, like some of those TV shows where the first time you see it, you're like, it's not that funny. And then 10 episodes in, you're like, okay, I see what we're doing here.
It's like what we're doing right now when people try and listen to a podcast about UFO abductions. And then we're talking about memes from almost 20 years ago.
Hi guys. Welcome to the What If podcast. That soundingly, seemingly incomprehensible girl at the beginning who's saying wild names that are not our real names is not our real names. And she is our real friend. And her name is Lydia Eliza.
Got a, on a related note.
Yes.
I've got a What If spinoff idea I want to run past you later.
Oh Jesus! The brand expands.
The brand expands. Brand is currently weak. It may someday be strong.
I don't know if it's weak, y'all. Y'all be out here loving us and shit. Thank you for that.
Give yourself some air horns. All right. I think we left off. It's on the yellow page.
Where's it?
Shit, that's green.
Oh, God.
The other yellow. That's more green. The other way.
Wait, but where's the...
There we go. It's on that page somewhere.
The orange ones. Hey, wait. How do I get the things that I can see where it went?
Hit the button that says pad mode up on the top there. There she be.
Pulse.
There she be. Okay.
Okay, so anyway...
We left off...
You guys are nice to us.
Oh, yeah.
There we go. Found it. Sorry.
Timing is everything.
Nailed it.
We left off where Betty and Barney were about to start hypnosis, right?
Yeah, I think... Okay. Well... I think where we left off in my memory. Hey, if this is your first time listening to the show, this is probably exceedingly weird for you. We did a part one of this episode last week. Go back and listen to last week's episode first. If you don't do that, none of this will make sense, or it will, but it'll suck. Last week we left off with, I think what you said was, that Betty and Barney Hill had been going to hypnotic regression therapy, and that the story that emerged, the narrative that came out of their therapy, was where we were going to kind of pick back up this week and say, Perfect. Hey, we heard the small version, the long version that emerged from all of that additional information is where we're going to go.
Okay. So they were hypnotized separately, and they had amnesia induced at the end of each session, so that they wouldn't recall what had been discussed in that session, so that they could not talk to each other about it outside of the sessions.
I already have a question, and I'm sorry about it.
Go ahead.
Is there any scientific support for that being possible?
I don't know. I only had enough time to read the alien books, not the real books this week.
No, that's fair. But like that, saying that statement sounds pretty wild to me, that they're like, well, we made them forget at the end. It's like, well, wait, is there a way for someone to tell me to forget something? Because I got some shit I'd like to forget.
Like, ever been to a hypnotist?
I think we all do.
Might be worth trying. I don't know.
Okay.
I'm sure there are studies that have been done on that. I haven't read them.
Okay.
During these sessions, Barney described what he called men in the craft in more detail.
That's right, because we talked about they seem to refer to them as human instead of additional things.
He said that one of the men was a round-faced man who reminded him of a red-haired Irishman.
Sick burn, I guess. I don't know.
He also said that another who he thought was their leader was a, quote, not too big man who wore a military cap, a shiny black jacket, and a scarf.
Okay.
He also said that this, quote unquote, man had large slanted black eyes and communicated telepathically with him.
That's exciting.
He remembered the man inside the ship telling him telepathically to, quote, stay there, just keep looking, when he was observing the craft through the binoculars.
Oh, that's interesting.
However, like
trying to keep his psychic attention, maybe?
I guess, or I don't exactly know what we are to infer from that. There's a 1999 interview with Betty Hill that's available on YouTube in 10 parts. So I think they're like, it was uploaded back when you could only upload 10 minutes at a time to YouTube.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's whatever that is, an hour and 40 minutes-ish.
Is this the one we told people not to watch last week?
No, those are the hypnosis tapes. This one she did willingly and knew she was being recorded.
Oh.
And was done in...
Holy shit! Hey!
But it was done 30, almost 40 years later. In 1999, it was one of, I think, the last like filmed interviews she did. But in that interview, she says some things that contradict her and Barney's statements from the 60s.
That's right. Is this the one where you said she was like happier about it, or said it was a generally more positive experience than...
Yeah, and she said like she wasn't scared during it, and that she kind of seemed to downplay a lot of the negative aspects that are noted in The Interrupted Journey and in Captured, the two books about this story.
Got it.
But But in that 99 interview, Betty says that the aliens spoke English and that all of their communication was verbal, not telepathic. So I don't really know what to make of that. Also, she didn't call them aliens, which was the thing that I think we brought up last week, that she called them astronauts in that 99 interview.
That's right. That's right. I mean,
so she, I don't know if that was a discrepancy between her and Barney, that Barney received telepathic communication, but she did not, or if that story changed over time or what happened there.
I mean, I also think, you know, over 30 years, if someone communicated to you,
it's more like, I mean, 99 was 38 years after the actual incident.
If someone communicate, I mean, I don't know, I guess I was going to say something dumb. What I was going to say was, I mean, could that easily mold from your communicating English words with your mind to communicating English words with your mouth? Because that's significantly more digestible as a concept, that someone was speaking to you instead of fucking being inside your brain.
Well,
you know what I mean?
And in their original descriptions, or their 1960s descriptions of this incident, they do both describe the beings making sounds and communicating with each other through some sort of verbalizations.
That was not English and separate from the telepathic stuff.
Correct.
Interesting.
So there are sort of like three different angles to this, that they make sounds or have some sort of language of their own, that they speak English, and that they communicate telepathically. All are said at various points.
That is a weird and interesting detail.
How so?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I don't mean to keep beating this horse dead. I know I talked a lot about this last week, but like, wouldn't it just be easier to say something to the effect of like, I don't know, maybe they spoke in English to like make us feel better or make it easier or whatever, or they spoke verbally, but we heard it in English. But for them to be like, no, they spoke verbally in some weird sound language, they spoke to us telepathically in English, like, I don't know. That just seems interesting to me.
The potential flip side of that is that they can't get their story straight.
That's true. That plenty of things emerged because,
And they're telling contradicting versions of the same events, potentially.
Sure.
Well, I mean, Betty is. She said one thing in 61 or 64 and 5 when they're doing the regressions, and another in 99.
Yeah.
So I don't know what the reason for that is, but she definitely said two different things.
I'm also goddamn sure that in 38 fucking years, if you ask me anything about my life right now, I'll be full of shit about probably 80% of it.
I'm not taking too much meaning from it. I'm just saying I noticed that there were some discrepancies between the two.
Cool. I got you.
Okay. So Betty or Barney runs back to the car after having this telepathic communication. Betty's still there. They drive off. This part was in their conscious memory.
Yep.
As they're driving, this buzzing sound happens. That's sort of this like rhythmic buzzing that they thought was localized toward
to the trunk,
around the trunk of
that's
the car.
Right, that's right.
And at that point, their conscious memory stops or fades out.
Hmm.
Their next conscious memory, they're driving and they hear this set of buzzing sounds again. So there's this gap of, they later figure, an hour and a half to 2 hours in between when they're driving and hear the first set of buzzing sounds and when they're driving and hear the second set of buzzing sounds.
So they had like a fade out, fade in.
That seemed like it was maybe triggered by whatever that sound was, or somehow related to whatever that sound was. So that's,
oh yeah,
that's the gap that they're focusing on and trying to fill in.
Okay.
Betty recalls under hypnosis turning off of the highway and onto a narrow side road, possibly a gravel road, after hearing this buzzing sound. Barney said, quote, under hypnosis, quote, I made a turn and I never knew this. I don't know why I had to make that turn, and I was lost. I saw I was on a strange area of highway that I'd never been on before, and I was being stopped. I was very uncomfortable, but somehow the eyes were telling me that I should be calm and that I would not be harmed and to relax. I saw these men coming down towards me.
Fucking lit, bro.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
The eyes were telling me I should be calm. That sentence fucking sucks.
It's so buck wild, dude. Like, I don't know. I mean, first of all, there is no reference to eyeballs or like a giant eye or multiple eyes at this point. But like,
not in his conscious memory. No,
no. But yeah. But for that to just be a random thing that he starts to say, like, that's kind of creepy.
Well, it doesn't get any better.
Let's go. We're going also, all in.
Also, I was being stopped, meaning like I'm not in control of the car, or meaning there's something blocking me, or I'm being flagged down.
Yeah,
that's not totally clear.
That's very passive slash active language about whatever it is you're talking about. Something was affecting you.
I also thought the wording of, I saw these men coming down towards me. You're driving and, quote, being stopped, but something is coming down. Does he mean like literally from above, or just down in a more colloquial sense of like towards me?
Like coming down my way kind of thing. Yeah. I mean, we're literally talking about a thing that was in the sky.
Yeah, assuming that's what's happening right now. I mean, that's still an assumption. There's a lot of... He doesn't say, like, the craft was above me and it forced me to stop. He doesn't mention the craft at all. He says the eyes were telling him things and he had to make a turn and then he was being stopped.
Yeah, it's a little loosey-goosey.
And then these men or beings or whatever came towards him.
It's a little loosey-goosey.
The car then dies.
Bummer.
After he stops, Barney tries to start it and he can't. Betty tries to open the car door to run, but the car was surrounded by two groups of, quote, small men.
Hell no!
Oh, that was the big one. I meant for That's a smaller good. Hell no.
It's okay.
I meant for this one.
Hell no.
They both independently recalled seeing two groups of three men, one group on each side of the car, which I thought was an interesting corroborative detail.
Absolutely.
And specifically, three groups of men, or a group of three men with one individual person being whatever standing behind them. So a total of eight. Each side of the car has three and then one, three and then one.
Squads.
Very, like a very specific number and grouping and location. That seems like would be all the odds of coincidentally getting that would be very small, it seems.
And also the odds of that being a part of your alibi that you would collaborate on to try to be specific about seems pretty low to me, too.
Barney said at this point, quote, if I did think about my gun, I would be harmed. So again, implying strongly that something or someone is in his head. To the point where it's aware of his thoughts. If I thought about my gun, I would be harmed. Because he had a handgun in the car. And at this point, I think it was like on his person.
But like you had to think about your gun to think about them telling you not to think about your gun. Because they said, don't think about your gun. But when someone says, don't think about your gun, the only thing you can do is think about your gun. But he wasn't harmed. Well, or was he?
No,
I'm just saying,
not intentionally, at least.
I'm just saying that's a hard line to walk.
Maybe it was more of putting the thought into his head of like, don't reach for it.
Yeah. Okay,
fucking leave it.
Yeah. We traveled from a real, real far way away. Your 45 Magnum is not gonna.
It may be worth. It is worth mentioning at some point in this story that, because I don't think we've specifically said this yet. Barney is black. Betty is white.
Where are we again? I forgot. We're Northeast, right?
We're in New Hampshire.
New Hampshire.
In 61.
All right.
We're at a time period in the United States where interracial marriage is illegal in, I don't know how much of the country, but some of the country.
Sure. Probably not that far north of the Mason-Dixon line at that time. But
I don't think New Hampshire specifically, no, but
it's
some parts of the country.
Sure.
Both of them were at... Barney especially was very involved in civil rights activism.
Oh, interesting.
Ended up speaking at the UN later in his life.
Oh, wow. That's like amazing.
Very, very involved.
Cool.
So I don't know. There may be some like underlying issues, specifically when we start digging around in people's psyches.
Right.
About being, and he expresses like at times in his telling of the story, like, I wasn't sure if we'd be able to stay at this place because I didn't know if they would accept us, or like,
oh, because they're a biracial couple.
Yeah, it was 2 a.m. and I thought maybe we could find a motel, but instead we kept driving.
Right.
And like, we tried to choose restaurants carefully, and like, it just seemed like it was definitely something that was
prevalent,
frontal in his brain.
Right.
I don't know how that factors in here, if it does, if it doesn't.
Sure.
Just sort of like an overtone to the whole story, though.
Yeah, and also, yeah, I think there's, well, yeah, keep going. We'll see where it does or doesn't crop up. That's interesting, though.
Okay, so the car dies. Barney has this thought put into his head not to reach for his gun. He sees these men approach their car, and as soon as he made eye contact with one of them, he became helpless. He said, this is all drawing from his hypnotic regression tapes.
Right.
So I'm paraphrasing, but this is based on his words. He became helpless. His mind went blank and he couldn't move. So he was basically, he was awake, but he was like fully incapacitated.
And this, to get into tropes a little bit, is not super far away from something that we've seen and talked about before with people who are incapacitated by the presence or sight or interaction with something like this.
It's interesting because this case probably started a lot of those tropes. Like most of those.
Oh, didn't. You think so? Yeah. I mean, I guess it makes sense because this was the first abduction case. Heyo.
That stuff wasn't out there in the way that it is now.
Sure.
You know, if we were going to fictionalize an abduction experience, we would know which points to hit. That didn't really exist then.
Yeah.
Or at least not as prevalently as it does now, for sure.
It's interesting. I feel like I have to, in a way, dissect my own psyche because I feel like I give credence to that as like, yeah, that makes sense. But I go, does it make sense to me that you would be sort of in some state of paralysis through interaction with said thing? Because that's a trope that's been retold to me so many times through Hollywood and movies and the show and stories we talk about.
Well, it just makes logical sense too, though.
But that's
if you're trying to capture something, you want it to be as
put
docile
in a trance-like docile state. Yeah, totally.
If you can do that fully without harming it, you know, we would tranquilize an animal, right? If we were tagging and releasing an animal,
right? And as we do,
if you could do that by just looking at it, we would do that. I hope.
Be fucked up, man.
We wouldn't get to shoot anything that way, so maybe we wouldn't. But
you'd be like trying to get on the subway and somebody just looks at you and you just go,
I'm saying if we had that power over like,
I know.
You just make eye contact with an eagle and it drops out of the sky. You gotta go run over with a pillowcase and catch it.
Come on, bud. You live with me now. You're my America friend.
I didn't say bald eagle, Ryan.
You're right.
Maybe it's a golden eagle and it's hunting for goats.
Goats.
Still my favorite YouTube video. If anybody can show me a better YouTube video than the eagle hunting goats.
Are you talking about the one where it drops off the cliff?
Fuck yeah, I am.
Why is that your favorite YouTube video? That's a fucked up favorite YouTube video, bro.
Well, guess I'm a fucked up dude. I don't know.
You're just the captain of the Nature is Fucking Lit subreddit. Like,
it's one of the craziest things that I think has ever been documented on film.
Oh, yeah. A 30-pound eagle picking up a fucking 100-pound goat and dropping it off a cliff.
Murdering the fuck out of it.
Yeah, it is fucking crazy.
Yeah, and it's filmed beautifully. It's crazy to me that video exists.
I don't know. It just seems like you like it a little too much, bro.
It's true. I have tried to show it to a lot of people. No one's ever reacted well to it.
Everyone's like, yeah, bro, whoa, that's really intense. And you're like, I know, it's great, right? And they're like, I don't know if great's the word I'd use, Spencer. Thanks, though.
So he's unable to move. Two of these, quote, men take him out of the car and start carrying him away from the car down a path through these woods. Because they've turned off the highway. They're in, like, some wooded area.
Right.
And they're carrying him like under each armpit in a way that he can feel his feet dragging on the ground still.
Okay.
But they're holding up his full weight.
Sure, I can visualize that.
Betty describes this same time period by saying, quote, I kept trying to wake up. Then I open my eyes and I'm walking through the woods. I just opened them real quick and then I shut them again. Even though I'm asleep, we were walking. So she also seems to be incapacitated, but somewhat conscious, or like drifting in and out while being moved somewhere, or maybe while she was moving herself somewhere.
And again, I mean, I would say relatively corroborative of what Barney is saying.
It seems like they're describing the same experience, more or less. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is so huge, man.
Yeah. I mean, we can get into that later of like, this is 3 years removed. They would have had plenty of time to discuss these things before these hypnosis sessions. Betty was having nightmares describing that involved very similar events that she had been talking to Barney about.
So had he interpreted and like ingested some of these things and made them part of his own? So yeah.
I mean, it's not like it's the next day and they hadn't talked, you know, it's three years later.
It's not a hard alibi in any way, shape, or form.
They were then led down this path or carried down this path through the woods. Betty said she could see Barney, but he appeared to be asleep and was unresponsive. She tried yelling out to him a couple times, and nothing happened. One of the men told her that there was no reason to be afraid. They only wanted to do a few tests, and then they would be returned unharmed.
Okay. Sweet. Oh, sure. No problem. I'm so sorry that we were inconveniencing you by not wanting to do that thing.
At the end of this path through the woods, they saw the craft that they had seen earlier. She described it in a little more detail, saying it was metallic and oval, but that it didn't reflect light the way she thought it would. It was almost a full moon and it was clear, but she couldn't see. Like, it was like extremely matte metallic finish. It wasn't shiny. It wasn't reflective.
Swag.
I don't know. She seemed to think it was important.
Interesting,
I guess.
That's like a, isn't that kind of what they do to some of the military planes? Is they do that like matte powder coat so they can't be, their like reflections don't happen.
Be a little stealthier. Yeah. Also interesting with that angle that they do keep referring to these people as men and that they make some specific military associations with them at times.
Yeah. Specific military associations?
Barney said that they were wearing a military-style cap. He says a couple times that one of the men reminded him of a German like military officer, like specifically a Nazi officer.
That's kind of trippy.
They're within a couple miles of an Air Force base. I don't know.
And they... Just to refresh my memory, they were not near where they lived.
They were on their way home, but I think this happened. They were still like 90 miles from their house or something like that.
Yeah. Okay.
They come up to this craft.
I'm sorry. The Air Force base was 2 miles away from where this incident happened.
I would have to look at a map. This happened, off of route. This incident happened off of Route 3 near Indian Head Point.
Okay.
They lived, I think it was Kingston, New Hampshire.
Okay.
And then the Air Force Base is Pease, P-E-A-S-E Air Force Base.
Okay.
They're all within like an hour or two of each other, but I don't know the specific triangulation.
Got it. Okay.
And they actually, until... quite a while later, didn't know the specific location that they thought this incident happened at. They just remembered their last point before this happened.
Got it.
So they come up on this craft. There's a like a rim around the edge where these windows, this row of windows is. And then Betty said that there was a ramp that came down from underneath the craft. And that was how they got up into the craft.
Hell yeah. Six.
It's on the green page, I think. Yeah,
thank you. See, I gotta get retrained, bro. Gotta get retrained. Hell yeah.
Betty said at this point, quote, "The heck with it. I don't have any control here. They've already got Barney close to being on board, so I might as well stop fighting."
Woof.
She also said, however, in 1999, in that interview that we referenced earlier, that she punched the shit out of one of them.
Hell yeah.
Sick. Yo, you got to Independence Day it, man. You got to punch an alien at some point.
You have to try.
What's the worst that could happen?
You get punched back.
You get punched back. You
disappear forever.
Shit's already pretty borked. Yeah, I don't think it's going to get a whole lot worse.
Whole program's cocked at that
point. Your whole program's cocked,
bud. Might as well shoot your shot.
Real talk.
Punch that dude right in his shit. Okay.
Assert your dominance, man. The shit belongs to me now. I'm the captain. Give me the keys, motherfuckers.
Start a coup as soon as you get on board.
You just got Betty Hill. Captain Betty Hill to you, motherfucker. Pow, pow, pow.
Can you smell it?
Just hit him with the two-piece. Drop the people's elbow on an alien and be like, I'm your leader now. Fuck you.
Okay, they get on board the ship. And they go up this ramp onto the ship, and they go down a corridor, and they're taken into two separate rooms. Barney described the room that he was in as, quote, a hospital operating room. It was a pale blue color. I think you just hit a hi-hat.
It's an accentuation point.
Sick.
Sound effects. That's the door opening.
I thought you very carefully opened your beer into the microphone for a second.
That would have been amazing.
He said, I got on a table and I was afraid, but somehow not afraid enough to run. Might have something to do with the fact that you were paralyzed a moment ago and can't.
I was going to say, you're also at a point where it's like, where are you going to run?
Back down that ramp.
It doesn't seem like if you're inside of an operating room inside of an alien spaceship, you got a whole lot of like, I'm just going to run out of here.
Well,
I mean, I understand the, you know, like the logic behind it. If you were in that place of like, can I run? But like,
yeah,
doesn't seem like running is going to do you a whole lot of good.
Also, if you run down that ramp, who knows? You might run into outer space.
That's true, bud. You don't know where that ship is anymore. You
might not be in that field.
They might have taken off since you last jumped on.
He said it looked like an operating table or an examining table. I could be fully supported on it, and it was very clean. Betty described a similar table and said it was metal and about 4 feet long.
Okay.
Shit gets bad real quick for Barney.
Shit went bad real quick. You know what I mean?
I felt my shoes being removed and my pants being opened.
Uh-huh.
Did you say uh-huh?
I said uh-uh.
Okay.
I said,
hell no!
And I could hear a humming sound that seemed to be coming, or that they seemed to be making.
Hell no!
I could feel them turning me over.
Hell no!
And putting something in my rectum. It was like a tube. It was not painful.
I present the previous soundbite to you without comment.
They looked at my back, and I could feel them touching my skin down my back as if they were counting my spinal column.
Whoa, that's crazy.
I felt something touch right at the base of my spine, like a finger pushing, a single finger.
Okay.
I was turned over again, and my mouth was opened, and I could feel two fingers pulling it back.
Ugh.
Mm-hmm. And then I heard as if some more men came in, and I could hear them rustling around on the side of the table I was laying on. And then someone scratched very lightly like a stick on my arm. So
weird.
Yeah.
It's weird, man. Yeah. What a weird description of everything.
So the messing around in his mouth and then other people running in. Betty sort of describes the other side of that. So she describes at one point after her exam, when she's sitting and talking to one of these guys, other of these guys come in holding Barney's dentures, freaking out because his teeth came out and hers didn't.
What?
And they're trying to figure out if some teeth are detachable or if they just fucking ruin this guy.
No way.
Mm-hmm.
Boss, we broke him. Boss, we broke the guy. Bring us back. Oh god, we're sorry. Bro, that's fucked up. That's so fucked up.
Are you supposed to do that? Or they just, I'll just put them back
check,
in.
Check hers. Check hers. Did he? Oh, God. Oh, put them back. Put them back. Put them back. We killed a person. Fuck.
Yeah, he got his teeth blown out by a grenade in World War II.
Whoa, that's so crazy.
He had fake ones.
Damn. Well, that'll do it.
He also said that the aliens seem to communicate by making a sort of humming or quivering sound. So he also describes them making some sort of verbalizations in addition to the telepathic stuff.
It's interesting, too, that they talk about humming and quivering and that the car was some sort of buzzing. Mm-hmm. Like, they're all kind of...
It's so hard to know, too, though. Like, try and describe a sound to someone.
No, you know? No, totally. But it just, all versions of it seem like they're cut from a semi-similar cloth.
Yeah, maybe. Who knows?
Didn't we talk about, wasn't there an episode where we talk about that concept of, like, shit. Was it, like, that humming?
Okay, give me a little more.
I know. We talked about, do you remember the Roman soldier thing? The ghost experience with the Roman soldiers walking through the basement?
Yeah, the like whole stone tape theory where certain areas record certain events.
And I feel like we talked about some version of how people who have like out-of-body experiences report some sort of like...
Oh, like a vibration.
Energetic vibration or humming or whatever.
I don't know if it was related to that, but that's something commonly associated with out-of-body experiences and like astral projection stuff.
That's what I'm thinking about.
Okay. I don't think that's so much a sound as like a physical sensation, though.
Yeah, I guess you're right. But that sound, yeah. All right.
I don't know. They don't, on the surface, seem related.
I guess
I don't really understand what either one is.
That's fair. I guess the thing I was thinking was, you know, if there are people who report having wild experiences when they are basically removed from their physical form, is there a version of what's happening right now to him where he is like seeing what's happening? Is he having an out of body experience?
Yeah, I think, I mean, maybe. I don't think it's necessarily related to these sounds, though. I think like he saw them making flappy mouth sounds.
Mm. And they came to him as vibrations or hummings whatever you want to call it.
I think he's just describing the sound.
Sure.
He heard it as you would normally hear sound. He's just saying it was a humming type
of sound.
A buzzing
humming. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Barney says at this point, quote, I had the most peculiar feeling that something was placed against my genital parts. It was more as if it was in a solution of something that had substance to it.
Okay.
Like they...
Jello.
Stuck his dick in some Jello momentarily.
Okay.
Maybe like some mashed potatoes, perhaps.
If I'd known it was going to be that kind of party.
He then felt, quote, a tug or pressure or something. And his best guess was that they had taken a sperm sample from him. Betty experienced a somewhat similar exam. They check out her... They were interested in her skin as well. They brought over something that she described as being like a microscope, but with a really big lens on it.
Okay.
And they put it up against her her arm, the skin on her arm. And she thought they were taking a picture or somehow like recording it.
Okay.
And they seemed very interested in the whatever the result of this was.
Can I ask a question?
She thought it might be like a cellular level, like they saw some sort of similarity or difference that they were or weren't expecting.
Okay.
But she got the impression that they looked closely at her skin and then needed to tell each other about it.
Okay.
You had a question?
I have a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Barney's story seems significantly more sexual than Betty's does.
Yeah, we'll get there.
Oh, all right.
I think there's
components of both.
Yeah. Although they both downplay them later, which is kind of understandable.
Yeah.
By 99, Betty says it didn't happen.
Well, repression's a hell of a drug.
It's so weird because she's so open about so much of it throughout her whole life, and then like certain specific elements sort of disappear.
But we all whitewash history, you know?
Yeah. I think she was trying to get, or she did get very into the UFO field in general.
After this experience.
Mm-hmm. Well.
Fascinating, man.
Years later. But yeah. Kind of just like progressively more the longer she lived.
Got it.
Also makes sense with the whole like, what would you do if a thing like this actually happened to you? Probably spend a lot of time trying to figure out what the fuck UFOs are.
Yeah, trying to find out what the fuck happened to you.
Yep. She said the examiner opened up her eyes and looked in them with a light, like an eye exam. Opened her mouth and looked at her teeth, looked in her ears. They took a hair sample. They like pulled out a couple strands of hair.
Okay.
They did what she thought was some sort of nervous system test. There was this machine that had a bunch of like, it was round and had a bunch of like small needles poking out of it.
Yikes.
That was connected to a bunch of wires that were connected to a display of some kind.
Whoa.
And she said they pressed it up against sort of like the base of her spine, and she didn't feel anything other than a light pressure. And then there was some sort of display on a monitor.
Crazy. So some sort of wild, like,
let's take a look at your spinal cord type of thing.
I was going to say, oh God, I'm such a terrible person. What's the thing?
What are you trying to describe?
The thing where you're having a baby and they look inside
an ultrasound.
Thank you.
Yeah. Maybe something along those lines.
It sounds vaguely similar.
Did they have
kids at the time? Because you said Kathleen, who wrote the book, was their daughter.
No, that's Betty's niece.
Oh, it's Betty's niece.
I don't think she ever had children.
Oh, interesting. Okay, got it.
They also did some sort of test that involved inserting a large needle through Betty's navel, which she said was... Go ahead.
Hell no.
Which she said was very painful at first, but the leader alien noticed she was in pain, waved his hand in front of her face, and then the pain stopped.
What? Bro, this is skidding. I mean, we have gotten trippy. This is trippy.
Minute 40 something of episode 2, so we better get to the weird shit.
Get to the weird shit?
Well, the weirdest shit.
I thought we were
That's what I'm saying. We're in the midst of the weird shit.
Oh, I was holy shit, bro. How far is this going, man? I'm getting close to my limits here.
So after this exam, Betty thought that timing-wise, they did hers first and then his.
Okay.
As if maybe they only had one doctor on board who needed to do both of these.
Oh, all right.
So after her exam, she had to wait for a while, and she was in this room with the alien dude who she thought was their leader.
Okay.
And they were having a conversation somehow. She doesn't exactly say.
Sounds like telepathically would be the mode.
Well, or just speaking. I don't know. She explained that she wanted to take something with her because no one was going to believe that this had happened to her.
She's right.
And the dude basically said, like, yeah, okay, like, look around and just pick something and I'll tell you if, like, you can keep it or not.
Right, right.
And she finds...
She just picks him up.
You're coming with me,
come
bud.
Come here, little man. You're mine now.
You can tell people about how you're real. She picks up this book that had a bunch of weird writing on it. That she said, quote, went up and down. It was different. It had short lines. Some were very thin. Some were thicker. Some were very heavy. It had dots and then straight lines and then curved lines. It's not a very helpful description of their writing, but there was some sort of writing in it that was obviously not an alphabet that she was familiar with.
Had lines. We know it had lines.
He said, I could have the book if I wanted. This is a quote from Betty. He said, I could have the book if I wanted, and I picked it up, and I was delighted. I mean, this was more than I had ever hoped for. I'm standing there, and I'm saying that I've never seen anything like this book. I was very pleased that he had given it to me, and that maybe someday I could figure out how to read it.
I bet you can't, but okay. But all right.
She also asked this leader alien, or who she perceived to be the leader, where they all were from. And he showed her a map that was like a three-dimensional lit map of circles and dots and lines connecting some of these.
It's like a Star Wars map when they pull up like the holographic.
Yeah, essentially.
Yeah, yeah.
And he described that the points were stars and that the bigger ones were bigger points.
Sure.
And the lines, there were some had like straight dotted lines between them. Some had curved solid lines between them.
Yep.
And he described that the lines and the different weights represented trade routes, like established routes and expeditions, she said. So I don't know if that means like potentially we think we can go this way or we're like, I don't know.
Sure.
These were different routes between stars near their system.
That's hard mode in the video game.
Yeah.
You go take the expedition route and see where the fuck that takes you.
So she sees the star map. She's given this book. Unfortunately, before she gets booted out of the ship, one of the other aliens is like, hey, we need that book. You can't take that with you. I don't care what that dude said. He's not in charge. Give me the book. So she doesn't get to keep the book.
Aw, man.
But under hypnosis, she drew her from memory the star map that she was shown.
Oh, that's cool.
Mm-hmm. They also described in more detail the actual beings that they saw.
The men.
The quote-unquote men, yes. They had large slanted eyes. Okay. They were about 4.5 feet tall.
Okay.
They had big old heads.
Okay.
With wide cheeks and a very weak chin. They had a membrane over their mouths that Barney thought may have been responsible for some of the weird fluttering, quivering noises that they made.
Gross. Got some flapping going on there, buds.
They had no hair. They had just holes for ears, gray skin, small little legs, and big old barrel chests.
Got him.
Wanted to
little baby legs.
Wanted to hit that like four different times throughout your description. Just like
got him.
Shooting shots at these guys.
However, in 99, Betty said they were, quote, a form of human. So I don't fucking know.
But again,
4 foot
like,
tall, no hair, mouth flappy, barrel chested, gray humans, I guess.
But okay.
Some ugly sons of bitches.
I don't know what the fuck any of this is. Like I'm having a really hard time making any fucking decisions about any of this.
Right there with you, bud.
But I will say that if you've had to deal with a traumatic experience of 38 years, you would probably do everything in your power to normalize that as much as humanly possible. So the things
except she got into like every other weird possible shit out there and thought fucking everything was a UFO by 99.
Which makes sense, right? Like everything out there is possible to be the dangerous thing, but the thing that was actually dangerous to you at one point becomes something that is less dangerous to you.
Some ugly motherfuckies.
Right. Like if it's fucking big and scary and ugly and dangerous, you over time slowly morph and manifest that thing into something that's slightly more palatable to be the thing that like put its hands in your mouth and examined your eyes and like, you know, like
put a tube up your butt. If you're Barney,
I'm saying like, I think you do. We all try to sanitize our past either consciously or subconsciously,
yeah,
to some degree or another. And I would imagine with an event like this, with whatever happened, whether it's real or imagined or whatever, you probably still try to sanitize it. And so 40 years later, you try to make it some version that is more palatable, which is why the more intense details are, you know, the sharp edges are slightly more rounded 40 years later.
It's just weird because all this stuff was out in the public, you know?
You're saying it's a weird thing to change your mind about because there's a version of this
about it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I get that. I don't know. Again, the impact that would have on your psyche as a human being and how that would evolve over time. I have no I have no idea how that would impact that, and I have no judgment over like the fact that that would probably change a little bit.
Yeah. All right, we're coming up against the clock here. So evidence in a more physical way than their stories that might support this.
Interesting.
The map. Betty drew the map from memory under hypnosis, and years later, amateur astronomer Marjorie Fish analyzed it to try and match it to an existing system.
I like this. That's a pretty fucking cool idea to be like, you drew stars. Did you actually draw stars?
Right. She made a couple assumptions, one being that one of the 15 stars on the map was our sun.
Okay.
Because
I mean, that's a pretty big assumption, but well, okay.
In the, I left this out and I should not have. In the conversation between Betty and Leader Alien, he said when she asked, where are you from? He asked her, do you really know where you are? And she was like, well,
not exactly.
I know our solar system. And he was like, okay, let me show you in a way that you'll understand.
Oh, like
meaning like
you got you
are, he put the you are here on the map was word, her understanding.
Word. He hit her with the mall kiosk like, okay, simpleton.
Yes.
The bathrooms are here. This is your house.
Yeah. Okay. So maybe a big assumption. Who fucking knows?
All right.
So she assumed one of the stars was the sun. She made a 3D model of, because Betty was shown a 3D model, drew it two-dimensionally. But obviously space is three-dimensional. And even the angle that you were looking at things would affect how they would appear. On a 2D surface, you're not going to see the distance between stars, etc.
I also like... So
she attempted to make a 3D model of Betty's drawing using basically like beads and string between them and like to scale of the drawing.
Okay. It seems slightly generous, but okay.
Yes. She used distances between stars that were published in the 1969 star catalog, because she was doing this in like, I don't know, I think it was 71 or 72.
Okay.
Studying thousands of potential angles over the year. She worked on this for like several years.
Damn.
Because again, depending on which angle you're being shown this three-dimensional model from, when it's flat in the two dimensions,
could be anything.
You're going to see something very differently. They're going to appear to be placed differently than if you were a degree in either direction.
Totally.
The only one that seemed to match was from the viewpoint of the double star system Zeta Reticuli.
Zeta Reticuli.
It wasn't known that that was a binary system until like 72 or 3 or something after she started working on this. So she didn't put this together until she got an updated star catalog that said, oh, actually that thing that looked like one big star is two separate ones.
Hell yeah.
So she determined that they were probably from Zeta Reticuli, whatever.
Okay.
Which is about 26 light years from us. It's actually one of, if not the closest star system to us.
Hmm.
There's also the dress that Betty was wearing on the night that they were allegedly abducted.
Can I say one thing about the stars first?
Sure.
I feel like it would not be super hard with the amount of stars in the sky to overlay pretty much anything on top of anything if you are also making assumptions about the desired three-dimensionality of the thing that was originally drawn to get you to a conclusion.
I agree in a way, and that there's an incredible, there is incredible room for error in this process, and it's being done by someone who's not necessarily qualified to be doing it. Also, though, why would it have taken as long as it did? And why would it have required updated information showing a binary star system in order for her to find a match. You know what I'm saying? If she could have overlaid it with any number of systems and found a relative match, why didn't she do that in the first week that she was working on this? Why did it take 3 or 4 years and an updated catalog for her to find a match?
I mean, I understand what you're saying. I also think if I, in this room right now, pressed a red button that projected a star system into a three-dimensional map of this room, and I gave you as much time as you wanted to look at it, and then I asked you to go into the other room and put that down on a two-dimensional paper, that your accuracy in recreating that would be, I mean, it's such a hard thing to translate. With any degree of this was this close to this, and this was this close to this, and this was bigger than this, like, that would be, that, just because it's not like being like, draw an elephant or draw a bird. It's like, these are dots that are, some are bigger, some are smaller, some are closer, some are farther.
The scale matters immensely.
Immensely. So if your ability to recreate that is hugely important to its level of accuracy to matching it to something else, and that's a really hard thing to recreate.
The only potential counter argument I have to that is that it was done under hypnosis.
So we're potentially tapping into something that is not... Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
You're hypothetically or theoretically or whatever tapping into a subconscious memory or re-experiencing something in a way that, like, it might be more akin to looking at something while drawing a copy of it, you know?
And that,
rather than from memory, might be closer to drawing from observation than memory.
And that I can accept conceptually, but I think, like, technically or scientifically, I have a hard time necessarily digesting that.
Okay.
Not trying to shit on that. I just, like, that's my reaction to that.
Yeah, for sure. It's a little dubious, but also really interesting. And more than we have to go on from most of, if not all, UFO cases.
I'll co-sign that for sure.
They also have Betty's dress that she wore that night. It was actually ripped along the, I think we mentioned this last time, the seam, or like where the zipper is stitched onto the back. She claimed under hypnosis that that happened while she was struggling, while being brought onto the craft.
Oh, around the time where she was like, I saw that Barney was already on, so I decided to give up.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It also had some sort of pink powdery substance on it. That had discolored sections of the fabric.
Interesting.
Unfortunately, that wasn't tested until many years later to determine either what that substance was or how it was interacting with the fabric.
Yep.
It was tested at several different labs, but it was not ever really conclusive. There wasn't enough of the actual substance left to test the substance.
Okay.
And it wasn't clear from the interaction with the fabric what caused it.
Yeah.
Betty had a bunch more UFO sightings throughout the whole rest of her life and actually believed for a while that she was in telepathic contact with the aliens who had taken them in 61.
Interesting.
In that interview from 99 that I've referenced a couple times, she says that she has seen thousands of UFOs in her life. Ryan is sitting back in his chair, staring at me, mouth agape.
I pulled back a little bit. Well,
seems like too many.
Well, can I tell you the first thing that popped into my head when you said that?
What?
Big Mike.
Yeah. There's a little bit of that to the later years of Betty Hill, for sure.
Big Mike's, you know, when we talked
to everything's Big, a UFO.
Everything.
Yeah.
I mean, when we had a conversation with him, when we were on his deck with him, literally looking for UFOs.
And he's pointing out stars that aren't doing anything.
Telling us how many things he was seeing in that moment. And we were like,
Yeah. The telepathic angle is weird at the very least.
Yeah.
I'm going to actually just read from captured for a second. This is a longish quote from Betty. It was suggested to me to try to contact a UFO by sending my thoughts to them in order to set up a meeting. I didn't think it was possible, but I agreed that I would try it. Every night at 9 p.m., I would stand on my back porch and think, UFOs, where are you? Can you hear me? If so, go to Kingston, go to the Barrett's home, that's her parents, land in the field, go to the house and knock on the door. You will be admitted and we can meet.
Go to the house and knock on the door.
Uh-huh. Several weeks, this is still a quote from Betty, after several weeks, my father called me and asked me to come home because he wanted to talk to me. He said that he had received a telephone call from his cousin's widow, last name also Barrett, who lived just a few hundred feet away from Betty's parents' farm, asking him to visit her because she was very upset. She's 73, lives alone, and is strong and healthy and not senile in any way.
I promise.
She was awakened during the night by a knocking on her door. This was very unusual for anyone to pass through her yard or go to her house. The knocking was very strange. Knock, wait, knock, wait, knock, etc. She became fearful and did not go to the door. Then she spotted a red flash of light and thought that a thunder shower was approaching and maybe the wind had been blowing something against the door and making a knocking sound. Then the flashing changed color and seemed to suddenly be on the opposite side of the house. So she went over and looked out the window. There was a craft with windows lighted, flashing all kinds of multicolored lights. At this point, she decided she was just losing her mind. She pulled down the window shades, jumped into bed, and covered her head.
I get it.
Hell yeah.
Ms. Barrett had not been apprised of Betty's experiments. So she told the aliens every night at the same time
to go fuck with this person.
Go to this house, land in the yard, knock on the door, they'll let you in. They went to the house 100 yards away where the person had the same last name and did exactly that.
That's tight.
It's fucked up.
It's dope. I fuck with that.
There are a couple others, but that's the best one.
It sounds extremely hard to verify.
Of course.
And thoroughly awesome at the same time.
Phenomenal story either way.
It's a great story.
If it's true, it's the wildest shit ever.
Yeah.
There was a woman in New Hampshire, not only telepathically communicating with, but like ordering around a bunch of aliens.
Well, they were like, hey, we hung out one time. It was dope.
It was tight.
Look, we owe you a book.
True.
Let's do an Amazon delivery to your crib.
Let us fix that zipper for you.
Right. Sorry about that.
They also started experiencing weird, like poltergeisty type stuff at their apartment building.
Huh.
On December 10th of 65. So this would have been relatively soon after they finished their hypnosis stuff. Betty and Barney came home from work and found a chunk or like a half sphere of ice on their dining room table.
God damn it.
Underneath a newspaper.
Don't do that. You're being weird.
So they had left when they left in the morning, set the newspaper down on the dining room table.
Sure.
When they came home, there's like a bowl-shaped half sphere of ice underneath this newspaper in the same spot where she had left it. It was not winter. There wasn't ice, or it was winter, but there wasn't ice. Like, it hadn't snowed. There wasn't ice outside. There were ice cubes in the refrigerator, but this was oval-shaped and had like a print on it. Like it had been in a
mold.
In a mold of some kind, but she said it was underneath the outside layer. So like there was a smooth outer layer, but then you could see through it and there was some sort of pattern underneath.
What?
Yeah. Also, it had dirt, leaves, and sticks mixed in with the ice. And there was no water on the table or on the paper that had been sitting on top of the ice.
As if it
didn't
or couldn't or wouldn't melt.
Yep. She also said it didn't have the same hardness as ice and that it was flexible. So like, what? If you picked it up, you could flex it in either direction.
What the fuck?
They threw it in the sink and melted it.
Fuck you.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck off.
After all this, you get space ice just left on your kitchen table for you.
And you can't take one photo of you twisting that ice block? Come on.
I know.
Come on.
Last weird shit experience post initial UFO sighting. And then we can quickly wrap up and see if we think we have any idea what the fuck happened here.
Just really quick, last story, like another one of those doesn't forward the narrative, is really unique and borderline kind of dumb. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, that's not, it's irrelevant in every single possible way.
Yes.
Except that, like, then this one weird thing happened to us.
One more thing on the pile.
Yeah, but it's but it's not, it doesn't forward the narrative. It doesn't change the story. It's not impactful in any way.
Just weirdens it up like 2%.
We got a rubbery piece of ice under our newspaper in our house one day. Like, what the fuck? What the fuck is that?
Yeah.
All right.
So they lived in this apartment building, but for a while around this time, they were the only occupied apartment in the building. So I think it was like a, I don't know how many units there were. If it was a,
everybody was like, not me. I'm not going next.
Right.
It sounds like a bummer.
It sounds like it was probably a fourplex or something relatively small. It wasn't like they were in a 300 unit building and they were the only
and
ones.
Everyone's like, get the fuck out. Not living with them.
Quote from Betty about this weird shit. Recently, Barney and I heard the front door open. Someone stamp their feet and walk upstairs. We checked and found no one, and the door was still locked. This happened in the middle of the night, and it was loud enough that it woke both of us. As I sit here and write this, she's writing a letter, I can hear the sliding door on a closet in one apartment going back and forth. In another apartment, we can hear the water running in one of the bathrooms. Also, on
hell no.
On three occasions, we've found a light turned on in one of the apartments.
Hell no.
We were going into the apartment to turn the light off, and as we were unlocking the door, it shut off by itself.
Hell no!
So now their apartment building is also haunted.
Hell no!
I hate it.
Yeah. She also later found someone in her, after Barney died in 69, of a cerebral hemorrhage.
Oh, wow. That's not that far away from this.
Oh, no,
so
he was only
8 years or so.
Yeah, he was only 46.
I was gonna say, he would have been young. Wow.
After that, she was living by herself in that same apartment and one day found that someone had very recently been hiding in her closet with a baseball bat. That's terrifying when you hit it multiple times.
Yeah, that got a little rowdy there. Sorry, gang, but I'm really offended by that possibility.
That time she actually called the police and got like a security system installed and stuff, and the weird shit stopped. So either it was haunted or somebody was like
being weird,
breaking into her apartment routinely.
Fuck that.
Mm-hmm. Either way, it sucks and is weird.
That's kind of all sucks and is weird.
Uh-huh.
Like, there's not,
I really have no conclusions on this one.
There's not like a cool, and then it turned into something awesome. It's just like, this is just like super fucked up.
Yeah. Barney died because he never talked about his feelings and being scared of things and his brain exploded.
I mean, like, I know you're kind of joking, but I'm also kind of like, that seems like a very relevant possibility that if you had a super traumatic event that was super over the top and you were fixating on it 24/7, 365 for a really long time, that could cause some significant health problems. I don't see any way that that's not true.
Well, he definitely had them, and she had them, and she developed cancer and like had a bunch of issues, but lived to be 85 in spite of them. Their dog got really sick and died soon after this experience. Their dog that was in the car with them.
What?
Mm-hmm. This one just has like so many weird, sort of documented, but not really that well documented angles. The hypnosis thing makes me question every part of
everything.
It.
Yeah, because we know what's possible to inject into things. And
it was just long ago enough that like who really knows how it's changed over the years.
Who can verify all pieces of it.
Some of this information came out the next day. Some of it came out years later. The star map stuff came out a decade later. It wasn't even really in the public until three, four-ish years after the original incident. But like the Air Force reported on it and Project Blue Book wrote a report on it. And like a lot of people took it pretty seriously.
Right.
Both of them seemed like pretty normal people that had like pretty normal, unfortunate, but like realistic reactions to something.
Right. To something.
Whether it was aliens and UFOs or not, like something obviously happened to them that night.
Right.
That affected them for the rest of their lives.
Right.
I got no fucking clue, bud.
I mean, I don't either. I think one of the things that's hard about this specific story, and there are not many like it. I was going to say, and ones like it, but there aren't many like it, is that there is a level of depth and breadth to it where at a certain point, there's a level of complexity to the story that forbids you from being able to make a direct connection between any of it.
It's yeah, like, there's just so much, and it's seemingly so unrelated. Like, what does the ice on the table have to do with the spacecraft?
Or
and
the leaves over the earrings, or
the fact that Barney thought one of them looked German, or...
Or the dress, and the gun, and the butt pink, stuff, the pink goo. And the pink goo, and the... Like, it's so overreaching and ever-reaching that it's like, how do you even create a singular explanatory narrative for the entire thing?
No one really has.
I don't think
the people who spent years studying it and had direct access to both of them and all the evidence, no one came to a conclusion about what happened.
And I don't know that you could. I mean, how could you tie this up in a neat bow? That's like, this is exactly what happened. And
the two of them never really came to a conclusion about what had happened to them.
Didn't you say? Totally. Didn't you say though that the person who was their hypnotic regressor, I don't know what his job title is. Didn't you say that he, even after all of the hypnotic regression and all the therapy that he did with him, decided that this was a manifestation of Betty's mind that had infected Barney and then...
Yeah, I think his take was, I'm going to summarize and it might not be the most accurate, but he thought that something traumatic had happened to them on that date that then turned into this memory blockage that then was filled in by the nightmares Betty was having related to aliens and abduction and et cetera.
Got it.
That this, in those 3-ish years intervening, became part of Barney's awareness and understanding and recollection as well, because they were husband and wife and they saw each other every day and talked about this stuff and spent a lot of time in between trying to figure out what the fuck happened to us that night.
Right.
That was his take going in, and he was not convinced of anything else after he had done the 6-ish months of work with them.
And Kathleen, who like wrote the books and spent obviously a significant part of her life thinking about and talking through this, did she ever come to any sort of like takeaway or?
There's not a clear, in Captured at least, which is written by Kathleen Martin and Stanton Friedman.
Yeah.
There's not a here's what happened
statement
at the end. There's no we can say for 100% with 100% certainty that this version of events is correct and this version is not. I think it's implied throughout the book that she and Friedman mostly believe Betty's version of events.
Okay.
But it's not, for being a super weird case and situation, it's written like fairly objectively without much of their own like overt opinions being inserted.
Sure. Without conjecture.
Yeah. Meh. Minimal conjecture.
Minimal conjecture. I think that's what I have the hardest time with this story is like, I can't go, well, it was probably, because
there's not a good counter explanation for really any of it.
No, but there's also not a good, like, confirmation explanation for the story they've told either. Unless you just straight up believe everything that they said as 100% fact, and they got abducted by little men who probed their butts and fucked with their bodies and threw them back into their car driving the same speed, and they said, what the fuck was that?
Yeah.
Which I have a really hard time like fully wrapping my head around the possibility of.
Right. I think we gotta leave this one at that. I can't tell you anything any more than that.
I got nothing better either
one way
direction.
Or the other. Yeah.
Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ. Look, we ask open ended ... questions because we ain't got no motherfucking answers.
Sometimes we spend 2.5 hours realizing we have no answers.
That's what we're all here for, though, right? At least we talk about them.
We ain't found shit.
We ain't shit. Hey, but you are shit because we love you and we appreciate you. Thank y'all for supporting the show. Thank you for listening. If you're looking for ways to support the show, there's so many, and we love you all so much for doing the ones you're already doing. If you want to support the show,
post a picture of your dog in the Facebook group.
You can totally do that. Go to Facebook, search the What If Podcast. We've got a group and a page. Like it. Go hang out in the group. There's like 1,000 of us in there. It's dope.
Send $5 to hi@whatifpodcast.com on PayPal.
That's a way to do that. If you'd rather not just send that and get nothing in return, you can go to whatifpodcast.com and click on Patreon, or you can go to patreon.com/whatifpodcast.
If you live in LA or want to go to LA,
you can.
We have a Patreon. They fucking get it.
Okay, I'm trying to tell them. You get extra episodes. If you want to get something in exchange for your $5, go do that.
Buy tickets to our show in LA on October 30th with Dave Stone and Ian Abramson at the Satellite.
That's whatifpodcast.com/LA, or go to whatifpodcast.com and click on Live in LA in the header there.
Or just listen to us and enjoy it.
Fuck yeah. Thanks for being here. We appreciate you. Go leave an iTunes review if you want. That helps us out too. You could also call us at 612-246-4614. Follow us on social media, you pretty motherfuckers.